This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Hello and welcome to Been There, Done That on Joy 94.9. I'm Chris.
I'm Gordon.
And I'm still Phil.
Are you still Phil?
I was Phil this morning.
Not even moving Phil?
No, very still today.
Oh, right.
Walked up a lot of steps yesterday.
Oh, yes.
Did you?
Didn't have an elevator working.
Oh, what? And what floor are you on?
Second. And I've got a dog who won't walk upstairs. So I had to carry him.
You had to carry Eddie as well.
Oh, it's not easy.
You poor thing.
Well, he's 11 kilograms himself. So that's,
is he really?
I thought he was
a little one.
Oh. Well, he was.
I thought you had him on a special food diet.
Oh, yeah, seafood.
Seafood.
Seafood and eat.
That's exactly right. As long as you've got a visi vest or something, rather.
He especially loves workers with high-vis jackets.
Yeah.
Because when they were working on the railroad.
Yes.
He was getting free lunches from construction workers. And now anybody in a high-vis jest is his friend.
Terrific.
But they don't offer him food anymore.
Thanks ad-lib to Fade, and interesting sound art program again. Thanks to Julia for preparing this podcast for your
edification.
Delectation.
Mm. Or whatever
all those
you want to
big words,
those.
Yes.
We can also thank Harriet and Nina for saying they've listened to our podcast.
Well, you so can too. Listen to our podcast as well.
That's right. You go to joy.org.au/... Been there, done that.
Email us at beenthere.done.that@joy.org.au.
Thank you indeed too, yes.
So we're listening.
We are listening and we do respond. And look, if you'd like any music, just drop us a little note and let us know, because we've now got a little bit more flexibility in what we can play for you. On today's program, we'll be talking about Andy Bell, the lead singer from Erasure. We'll be talking about John Waters having a birthday, the film producer and actor, and the connections with The Simpsons. We'll be talking about our Queen, Elizabeth, having her 90th birthday, and the new $5 note, some of the other things about the royal family, and we'll be talking about our lovely planet and what's happening to it and what we should be doing to fix it up. All that and more here on Joy 94.9. Been there, done that with Gordon, Phil and Chris. Following us, Stand Up Straight and The Spirit Lounge. So there's plenty to listen to here on Joy overnight. Our program, Been There, Done That, does make a reflection upon the gay community that we ourselves have experienced, because we've got quite a few years on our clocks, haven't we, Gordon and Phil?
I did add it up one time. We're just under 200 years.
I'm sorry about that.
I don't think you added that right.
No, I don't.
Unless there were other people in the room and you.
But yes, and we also report on events that have happened. Our program is a history type program, and we'll talk about gay history as we've experienced it. We'll talk about other people who have, in fact, made the history, and it's interesting that, of course, we never recognise gay pioneers or people of importance when they're born. But people have got to earn their reputations. Sometimes a good reputation, sometimes a bad reputation. Mm.
It's interesting. I'm actually reading Dusty Springfield's biography, and boy, some of the things she got up to, not very nice, actually. But it was interesting.
She led a full life.
She led a full life, but she was a cutter. She used to cut herself.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's just she is a great gay icon.
She had a really tough life.
Yeah, because she was brain thing that she had with the family. It's people that are in the spotlight, they live on that and they can't come back to reality sometimes.
Oh, it's the endorphins, it's the highs from being in the spotlight, and the reverse doesn't work.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, it's sitting like in the shade. One person who's having this week, well, around about this this time. Their 52th birthday is Andy Bell.
He's actually born on Anzac Day.
Well, he didn't know that.
No, he didn't
was
know
going
that.
To be born then.
No, I'm sure he didn't, but he's actually born on Anzac.
Like so many others, he was born at a very young age.
Yes.
Thank you, Phil. Yes.
Quite a common thing. I'm finding that with people.
Are you?
Yeah, most of them. I'm not saying all because I'm not an expert on these things.
But Andy Bell's a huge entertainer in England, of course. Andrew Ivan Andy Bell. He has got a great voice, and he's with Erasure, the group, and they've been singing around for years, and Andy Bell is actually HIV positive.
It's very hard to get their career started, though, because every time they recorded something, somebody would erase it. It was listed for Erasure. So what you going to do?
Thank you. That is not true, listen.
Eraser and rub it out, don't you?
Well, he announced in 1998 that he was positive, and therefore he's been positive for 18 years. I think that that's actually showing an advancement in the way modern medicines are helping viruses be under control.
That's right. Apart from Erasure, he does a lot of solo stuff, and his latest two shows have been at the Edinburgh Festival. The first one was Torsten and the Bareback Saint. The second one was Torsten the Beautiful Libertine, and I have both of those CDs, and they're absolutely brilliant. And it's a sold-out performances at the Edinburgh Festival.
Why don't we hear from Andy?
Yeah, a bit of an oldie, but a goodie.
Yeah, and what's the lovely little track? It's called Au L'Amour. What's a boy in love supposed to do? And the modern upbeat version of this is actually being played on our daytime music mix at the moment, but we like the original version.
Yeah, you might say it rings a bell.
A diverse sound for a diverse crowd. Joy 94.9.
You're with Gordon, Phil and Chris. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9. Thanks for being with us. Lovely to know that you're out there. We've had a couple of little messages on the grapevine, on the smoke machine.
Yeah, with a blanket over the top.
Yes.
Like the Indians.
That's the How Indians, not the Dot Indians.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Now, that, would they have used dots and dashes?
No, it's the dot on their forehead.
No, with the smoke.
It would have been. It is certainly an encoded message, but I wasn't around at the time.
I don't know how they worked it out. Maybe
it was probably three puffs of smoke for an invasion, two for a cookout,
or two longs and a short, yeah. With a bit of time lag in between the blankets.
Mr. Morse would be very upset if that was the case,
or just a continuous one. I'll burnt the chops.
That's right. Or we have a new pipe. Pipe.
Talking about somebody that would appreciate that.
Well, film director John Waters having a birthday during this this week. Yep. On the 22nd of April. He was born in 1946. So he's what 60 years? That's 70 years. Wow.
Yeah.
Does he have the world's greatest moustache or not?
I want to know whether it's actually a grown one or whether he just puts it on with a bit of makeup. The eyebrow pencil or something, because
it'd be easier than shaving it.
Well, ladies and gentlemen and dear listener, of course, what we're referring to is this very, very thin pencil line moustache that Mr. John Waters has on his face. And it really is the width of an eyebrow pencil mark.
That's what I always looked. I thought it was when I first ever saw John Waters' photo or saw him on the television. I thought he'd just drawn it on there with an eyebrow pencil just for the hell of it. You know?
His general appearance is not that of reality.
Yes, true.
He's not the sort of guy that you're going to walk out on the street and see somebody, oh, that looks like John Waters.
Yeah. He's a very, very interesting performer when he was live on stage. Very rude. The language that he uses every swear word in the
movie.
Oh,
no. Well, he's a film director, and you might have seen some of his works, Desperate Living, but what's Hairspray?
Hairspray was
the
big one.
The big one. And I think we might have to see if I can find a piece of music from that.
But we'll play that a little bit later.
But he is such an icon in the, as it were, the film industry and everything, that he was, and as a familiar actor, that he became the subject of Phil's greatest
love.
Well, I'm not too sure that The Simpsons is my greatest love.
Ah,
it's a hobby.
A hobby.
But on the question of his moustache.
Yes.
He was in an episode of The Simpsons called Homer's Phobia. And they have production meetings, much like we do, but I think theirs are much more productive. And they decided to draw his moustache with a twirl on the ends.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Because when it was just drawn straight, it looked like a mistake.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So he appeared playing a character called John,
mm-hmm.
who owned a store called Cockamanies. And we're going to, unlike most weeks, we're going to go into this episode in good detail. We won't go verbatim because we'd need 23 minutes less ads.
Yeah.
But the Simpson family had a prank go wrong and their hot water service was no longer in service.
Oh, right.
Or their water heater, as it would be known.
Mm-hmm.
So they got a bill from the plumber for $900. And Homer said, well, that's a job for our life savings, our family savings. So he goes into the bedroom, pulls out a big water bottle.
One of those 10 or 15 litre bottles.
Gallons.
Gallons of water, yeah.
And, of course, it's full of coins and he's struggling there and he drops it on the front lawn, and at which time it promptly goes through the lawn, through planet Earth and comes out in China.
It was so heavy.
So
only in the Simpsons could that happen.
That's true. Or Indiana Jones, maybe.
Yeah.
But, so that created a problem of needing the cash. So Marge said, we've got an antique Civil War doll that her grandmother gave her, and that they'll go to the mall and sell this, and that should give them the $900.
Right.
So they go to Cockamanies in the mall, and it's a nostalgia store, and it's run by this man named John, who's voiced by John Waters, and it looks like John Waters, and
actually
sounds
John
like
Waters.
John. It is John Waters. And he has to give them the bad news that this antique Civil War doll is, in fact, a liquor-lagged whiskey bottle from the 1970s, and that Marge's grandma had a drinking problem.
Oh, no.
But while they're in the store, Homer asks why he's selling all this stuff like monkeys, lunchboxes, and sort of kitchen camp sort of stuff. John says, well, this is what's in everybody's
buying
collective. And Homer says, oh, we've got a house full of this stuff. You should come around. So he did. And has a lot of fun with Homer. They play music and dance together and, you know, getting along like a house on fire.
Yeah.
And John goes home, and Homer's talking to Marge the following morning and says, oh, we should have John and his wife around for dinner one time. And Marge says, well, John probably doesn't have a wife. And it takes about 10 minutes for her to get through to him, at which she looks him straight in the face and says, John is a homosexual. At which case, Homer freaks out and says, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, I danced with a gay. John sort of hangs around with the family, but they do a tour of the city, which Homer refuses to go on because John's gay. And the family come back from the tour. Bart's in a Hawaiian shirt, being super camp and quoting John. He's got a zapper gun. He's going zap, zap, zap on everybody. So Homer's freaking out that, you know, Bart's going to be gay, and he tries to fix it. And I'll try and keep this story as short as I can.
Short, yeah.
Because it's almost at the running time now. And so Homer tries three things. He takes Bart out to the freeway, sits him in the middle of the embankment in front of a smoking ad for Laramie Slims. Now, because there's two women there, scantily clad, leaves Bart there for the full day, comes back and says, you know, how do you feel now, Bart? And he says, oh, I feel like a cigarette. And Homer says, oh, that's all right. And he says, what type do you want? He says, oh, anything slim. So that was a failure. Next thing they try is they take Bart to a steel mill, and they arrive there just on break time, and all the lights go off and the mirror balls come down and the coloured lights go on and they start playing CNC Music Factory's Everybody Dance Now.
Everybody dance!
And it's a gay steel mill.
Oh, no!
So,
and all the workers, all the muscles and everything, dancing with each other. Oh.
So Homer grabs Bart and they run out of that place. And they figure the only solution left is to take Bart hunting. He needs to kill something be a man. So they go out into the woods hunting deer. But the problem is, there's no deer. There's no prey at all. So Mo, who's joined along at this point, says, oh, I know where there's some deer. And they go to Santa's village, which is full of reindeer. Oh, and they give Bart the shotgun. There's two schools of thought, whether he just fired in the air or two of the reindeer actually collided in a fight and it sounded like a gunshot.
Oh, right.
Either way, they turn around and Bart hasn't shot anything. And the deer are getting rather upset that there being people in the enclosure, and start attacking. So Homer and Mo and Bart are all running for cover and hiding under food barrels and all sorts of things. And it takes John and the rest of the family to arrive to rescue them using a, let's say, battery-powered Santa toy. on a little sleigh type thing, and all this thing says ho ho ho. The reindeer hear that and run off, and John explains that's because Santa is their overlord.
Oh, okay.
They're afraid of him.
A very subtle reference. Yeah, so, good.
Yeah. And Homer comes out and thanks John profusely and apologises for being homophobic. And Lisa says, that's the best response you're going to get out of my dad. And John says, well, basically, all I have to do is save the life of every homophobe and then we'll be okay. And Lisa said, yes.
What a social commentary.
The episode ends with a social commentary. And after the credits, it says, this show is dedicated to the steel workers of America.
Yeah.
Keep reaching for that rainbow.
Wow!
So that's, of all John Waters' work...
That's the thing you remember
the one
most.
I remember most.
Well, why don't we listen to a piece of music from John Waters?
Yeah, all right,
from,
then.
From someone.
From Hairspray. It's called I'm a Big Girl Now.
Don't contradict me!
Don't disobey me!
Don't even think about going to that audition!
Please!
No!
Mother!
Stop!
Bringing a little joy to your life. Joy 94.9.
You're with Chris, Gordon and Phil. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9. The piece of music that we've just heard was I'm a Big Girl Now from Hairspray, from John Waters, the gay director, who Phil told us was represented in The Simpsons
playing
episode.
Playing a character called John.
Yes.
So he great depth.
Great depth, of course. But the other thing was that it represented the gay community in quite a positive light, and The Simpsons are representative of, well, they like to think they're representative of the American way of life.
Can I ask, would they have done, they would have had to play it pretty positive because John Waters is pretty well known.
Yeah.
I don't think they could have made anything else out of it, really.
But of course, they've had some other gay people or icons or characters in The Simpsons.
Yeah, well, Homer briefly lived with a gay couple.
What? Oh, yes. Yeah, Marge's sisters or aunts.
No.
Thelma and Louise? No. What were their names?
No, there's a...
You mixed up your what's name shows there.
No, the couple of gay men.
Yeah.
One of the sisters is gay also. Yes, Homer was thrown out for missing probably too many occasions with Marge, and he found an affordable flat in the part of town where Mr. Smithers lives.
Oh,
well, and we know what happened to Mr. Smithers, don't we?
Well, we all know he's gay. He's been gay from day one. But
that would have been West Hollywood.
West Springfield.
West Springfield, was it? Yes.
Yes, everything's Springfield, and there's a Springfield in every state of America.
That's right.
And they've only ever once referred to which state they're in.
However,
and I'll let it out now because not a lot of people would have heard it, but it's Northern Kentucky. Oh. But when they go to their maze and they throw Lisa in the air to see where they are in reference to anything, she'll look out one direction and see the Toronto Space Needle, look the other way and see New York City, which you couldn't possibly see both of. They've got another point where five states meet at one point. Now, in real life, four states meet in the southwest. Five is almost physically impossible because you don't have wedge shapes. But, they take great joy in the mystery of the show.
All right.
Uh-huh. Excellent. The piece of music that we saw, however, that we just played was I'm a Big Girl Now. And someone who's a big girl now, of course, what's just celebrating the 90th birthday, is Elizabeth...
Windsor
Saxe-Coburg-Gotha.
No, the Saxe-Coburg-Gotha is gone.
Has it?
Ever since the First World War, when Edward VII, was it, decided that they had to be called Windsor because that German name was too upsetting for the British people, so that they're now called Windsor. Windsor only.
Oh, no, I presume that's the same story why Mountbatten was really Battenberg.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
Exactly. And why Alsatians came out after the war, not German shepherds.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right.
Yeah.
They touching people.
Alsace, yeah.
But we're not talking about the war.
Don't mention the war.
Not mention the war.
It's Betty's birthday is actually the 21st of April.
It is,
so
yes.
That would be her Royal Highness that you called Betty.
What you mean is your Royal Majesty.
Oh, no. She doesn't use deodorant. It's Highness. That's why people bow in front of her. They can't stand up. Who's saying this?
Oh dear, oh,
we're going to have lots of people emailing the show and telling us that you're.
I know how radio works. This will get edited out.
Oh, you hope.
You hope. Yeah, because when she came to the throne, she vowed to stay there for the rest of her life.
If
she
silly girl.
To be the at the service of the people and the government.
Well, she's hanging in there, isn't she?
Well, she's 90.
Imagine that, a politician keeping her word.
Yeah, well, she's...
But that's it. She's not a politician.
No.
And that's what sets that position away from politics or from presidents that are elected. In fact, that's one of the benefits of the royalty.
Well, it's
well, if you're in.
If you're in.
Not many benefits for us as others.
Yeah, but she's served longer now than Victoria, who was the leader, but now she's been there for more than a year longer than Victoria.
Now, in all this, of course, she's kept Charles out of it.
Yeah, but Charles...
And he is the next in line, and Charles is he's getting up towards 60, is he not?
He'd be over 60, I'd say.
Therefore, he's going to be past retirement age before he gets the job.
She had him when she was 22 or 3, didn't she?
Oh, wow.
We had him when he was 17.
Yeah, he was down at Geelong.
Geelong. Mm. That's right.
Yeah, but
his ears were in Torquay.
Charles just sits around waiting.
Oh, he doesn't. I'm sure he's got some activities.
He does some very good
royal duties, etc.
He has a great interest in architecture.
Yes,
he does too. And he's very interested in saving the great mansions of Britain.
Yeah.
And there's been a program on, I can forget the name of it. I know it so well, but I can't think of it at the moment. It's just south of Glasgow. And this house was hadn't been lived in for a long time. It was the Duke of the Campbell family owned it. And the Campbells were English supporters during the wars between the Scots and the English, and
they make a great soup.
Yeah, and they had this big house, and it was full of actual Chippendale furniture, and the Chippendale furniture was already packed up and in three pantechnicons going on its way to London, and Charles realised that they would never get it back unless they did something about it, so he organised some of his very rich friends to donate money, and they were able to turn those pantechnicons back to the house.
To our listening audience, a pantechnicon is just a big truck.
It's a big truck. It's a big one of those big trucks, yes. But he turned it all back, and they saved all this. And this house now is just full of the greatest collection in the world of Chippendale furniture. There's one piece there that is a wardrobe. It's a dresser, actually. It's a one-off, and they valued it at £3.5 million.
Yikes.
Yeah, so
wouldn't look good in my apartment.
No, actually, it would. It's a very nice piece of furniture. I've seen it twice.
What colour is it?
It's a rosewoody colour. It's a dark colour.
No, wouldn't work.
Wouldn't work. Okay, but
I'm going to save my money.
Yeah, it was featured on Antiques Roadshow. The house was featured on Antiques Roadshow, but SBS had a program about Charles saving this house, and it not only saved the house, he saved the village as well that was beside, that was connected to the house, and he turned the kitchens into a training place for young people to learn how to cook.
Copy Jamie Oliver.
How to be waiters and everything. They got the right staff in to do it.
Yeah.
One of the men from the village finished up to being a butler at Buckingham Palace.
Were they known as the village people?
They were probably the village people, yes.
Yes. Did they have a cop?
No, I don't think
they did. And an Indian?
They did. No,
the Indian
was too busy waving his blankets and sending smoke signals.
Let's not go back there.
but Charles has done... must be an awful thing to do to wait, knowing that when you're... parent dies, you're going to be getting a job.
Yeah,
you know.
However,
and, I mean, for the last 50 years, he's been wishing it dead.
Oh yes, yes. Oh dear, oh dear. We don't see a lot of Betty in the face. In reality, we don't see her in our newspapers trotting around UK waving the flag or anything.
But we see her on every bit of coinage we got.
Well,
don't we?
We do on the reverse of our coins. Not that that's much use these days, because everybody's got a plastic car that they wave around. However, the next version of the $5 note that they released a couple of weeks ago has a engraving of her visage, of her face.
Mm-hmm.
And engraving is a lot of wriggly lines, and she's got a lot of wriggly lines on her face, but it wasn't all... people reckon it's not all that representative of her face.
I don't think it's a very good portrait of her, but the idea is the note is braille sensitive, isn't it? For people that are...
Tactile.
Tactile, yeah.
You can touch it and feel it.
You can feel that it is a $5 bill, which is a hell of a lot better than what they they do in America, because all American notes, you can't tell the one thing from the bloody other. If you're in a dark space, you don't know what's a dollar and what's five.
They are working on that. It was all green.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And there were some variations in size.
Yeah, they're just very slightly, but hard to, as a blind person.
If you notice, though, when you're in America and someone's giving you change, they will count it out for you, and they'll say change from 20, confirming what you gave them.
Yes, yes.
I haven't seen that done here.
Oh, no.
I'm not sure
they used to do it.
Yes, last century.
Probably when we got decimal currency, they had to count it out.
No, it wasn't that. You could always go into a shop and they would say, if you went in one of the what's-name stores, they'd hold up the thing and say, check 20, so that the person knew that they had given you a $20 bill and they couldn't be said, no, I gave you a 10.
50.
They, 50. Well, we didn't have 50 pound notes. Would they be £20 in those days? They would hold up the £20 or the £10 note and say that it was a 10, and then they knew that the customer couldn't say, but I gave you a 20. You know, this is what they do.
And then when they get a lot of them, especially at Dimmies, they put them in this little cylinder thing in this vacuum tube and push the button and it goes whoosh.
No,
upstairs.
No. The earlier ones was the elevated carrier pigeon.
You pull the lever down and go chung. There was the shop in the corner of Swan Street and Church Street used to have one of those. The last place in Melbourne that used to have one of those.
Or Ryan's at the top end of Elizabeth Street.
Have they still got one?
They did have.
Oh, they did have one. But I know
it would have been a great time for employment of monkeys.
That's what they used to do. They'd put it into a little carrier thing, click it onto the wire container, and they'd pull the handle down and go zing up to the lady.
There goes all my money.
The cashier.
The cashier would be sitting up above the thing looking down, and she would send it back. The change back.
The king would be in the counting house counting all his money.
Yes. Sitting up in his eyrie. Little
it's eyrie. Good to be king.
But also on this, coming up in during this week is another thing that happened on...
Hold on.
Oh, what do you want?
Just one other little thing, please. Thank you, Gordon. The new notes have got colours on them that are quite wild and everything. That's also to distinguish the notes for those that are hard of sight.
Poor sight. Poor
sight. And of course, the extra security provisions there are much larger transparency window, so you can't fake the notes up.
I think that the those colours and everything, the way they've done it, would be very, very difficult for anybody to forge them.
That's right.
This is another thing that they have to do because people get a forge.
And on the subject of our money, we still haven't made any advancements for deaf people.
That's right.
Ching.
Phil, what was one of the songs on from the Simpsons thing? I Love the Nightlife, I think.
During the John Waters episode?
Yes.
I would imagine that was played.
That's Sean.
Now we've got it.
Joy 94.9. You're with Chris, Phil and Gordon. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9.
It's a bit
exhausting.
Yes, we've just been talking about the royal family and all the rest of it. But, of course, Australia is part of the British Commonwealth, of course, and there is talk about Australia becoming a republic. But we have another celebration to celebrate this week. On the 19th of April in 1984, Australia adopted Dance Australia Fair as its national anthem.
Oh, yeah. That was to replace
God Save the Queen.
Yes.
Or the King. God Save the King, God Save the Queen. Because that is only now played when a royal presence is in present.
Oh, right.
They only played if one of the royal family are there, they will play God Save the Queen. And as somebody was saying in The Age yesterday, they said, she must be sick and tired of hearing that after all these years.
Oh, truly.
She
probably turns off.
She
looks across to Philip and says, they're playing our song.
Now, that's interesting, though. I think at the same date back in 1984, I was going to say 1984, the green and gold colours were actually proclaimed as the national colours of Australia rather than the red, white and blue that presumably we had before.
Yeah, but we also have another set of colours too that most people don't. Our heraldic colours are blue and gold, blue and yellow.
blue and yellow.
Blue and yellow, they're our heraldic colours. But the green and gold is supposed to represent the wheat fields and the trees and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
But it's the wattle tree.
But they say that it's the wattle that is the thing that
because we had to appeal to the yobbos and the bogans.
Oh, did we?
It's something they can understand.
It's not only that, but you see, wattle grows everywhere in Australia all the year round. It flowers all the year round somewhere in Australia, and so that's why it was chosen as our national flower as well.
So if you needed a little bouquet of wattle on your lapel or on your
you might have to go to North Queensland.
Yeah. Then this is the tree that wattle will do it for you.
Oh, thank you, Phil.
I was trying to find that wordplay.
And you did, sadly.
Sorry.
With getting back to the Advanced Australia Fair, of course, they thought of Waltzing Matilda, which is not an anthem of any
sort.
No,
it's a story song.
It's just a story song. And then the Song of Australia, which was very popular in West Australia and in South Australia.
Yep.
Very, very popular. But it never got past the vote.
But Advanced Australia Fair doesn't mention bombs going off or winning wars and killing people. What kind of anthem is it?
Well, a friend of mine who was a musician, a very, very talented lady, she said it is not an anthem. It is just a song. But we have made it an anthem because of what it is and the words that it says. But she said an anthem is written in a certain style, and that is not an anthem style.
We've got the only song in the world that has the word Gertie in it.
Yes, well, I don't know why.
Apart from Gertie. But yes. That's a proper noun, not Gert by C.
Yes. Yeah, but Gert means to be surrounded by. It's a very old English word.
And where do you think the word girdle comes from?
Yeah, well, that's surrounding everything, isn't it?
Well,
I don't wear one.
Well, that surrounds you and puts you...
So when I go swimming, I'm girt by sea.
You're girt by sea because you're surrounded by water.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
We've learnt nothing.
Yeah. I don't think there would be another word that the author of the song could have put in to...
Well, not a single word.
Not a single word or double word.
But
even.
It's a good gimmick. We're talking about it hundreds of years later.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
It doesn't make it good, but we're talking about it.
Yeah, still true. Anyhow, it's not a bad old song when you hear it, when you're overseas and you hear it played. You think, oh, God, that's ours.
But I want to hear about the rockets' red glare and...
Oh, do you?
Bombs bursting in air.
The best known anthem is La Marseillaise, the French one, which is such an anthem. And then there's the next one is the Canadian anthem, O Canada. That is superb, beautiful anthem. And New Zealand.
And if you have trouble sleeping, O Canada will do it. Canada.
Yeah, but
that's
still
pretty much the song.
But New Zealand also have a very lovely national anthem. But ours doesn't compare to either of those three, but it's a song.
New Zealand, where men are men and sheep are nervous.
No!
And sheep are still sheep.
Stop it.
No. I want to get a woolly jumper.
Of course, these are expressions of pride in our country. They're a nationalistic symbol.
And face it, Come On Aussie hadn't been written at that point.
No, and I still call Australia home. That is probably in the... it's a modern interpretation. I still call Australia home.
It's soppy enough to be used as an anthem.
Written in 30 minutes at Channel 9 studio by Peter Allen.
Peter Allen, that gay man.
That was written, spoken and authorised by Gordon.
That was what?
It just sounded like a political statement.
But he had to do it because they said, why can't we have an Australian song? And he said, okay. And he sat down at the piano at Channel 9 studios and wrote it.
It's the trouble with talented people. They just sit down and do stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
Well,
not like us.
Whilst we have national pride, we also seem to be quite proud of trashing our country as well.
Oh, well,
don't we? Nature is doing the same for us at the moment with the bleaching of the coral, but we've done the same with stripping the trees off the land and turning it into dust bowls and other forms of degradation of our countryside, of just letting the dam waste goes from mining operations.
I swear.
It's poisoning people.
Yeah, and we're killing off our native fauna as well as our animals.
Yeah.
And what have you as well, birds.
You quote the song, pave paradise and put up a parking lot.
Yes, exactly right.
Well, parking lot, and that talks about vehicle pollution.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we're doing that to the air, we're doing it to the land. We don't deserve this.
But we're getting...
There was an organisation set up in the US some time ago.
Ironically.
Yes. Ironically, you're not wrong, Narelle. And what was the actual... it was in 1970,
yes.
On the 22nd of April, 1970, the first Earth Day was held, where a form of environmental awareness was created.
Yeah. But
attention was drawn to.
Yeah. I don't think they did. I don't know whether they did a hell of a lot at the time, but it was just drawing attention to the fact that the degradation that was going on at the time had to be stopped.
And I don't want to put poo on the Americans, but let's face it, they had done some, in the recent years before 1970, some really dreadful things to the world with the dropping of Agent Orange, the dioxin, on the jungles of Vietnam as part of the war, and that's still resonating around the country at the moment.
Atomic bombs weren't pillows full of feathers.
They were. That's right. They weren't particularly healthy either. Mm. So there might have been a collective from some people.
To their
America.
Credit, though,
yes.
If you're to travel to Los Angeles these days,
yeah,
you might look up and see blue sky.
Yes.
Whereas I can vouch for the 80s, and yeah, I'm sure the 70s,
I could vouch
it was
for the 80s.
A lovely shade of brown.
It's awful, awful.
Well,
place
I remember flying into LA once, and exactly as you say, you descended in this pit, this cesspit.
But the same is happening in China with Beijing when you've got all that.
We saw the Prime Minister, Mr. Turnbull, because we have to say their name these days because they change so often.
That's right.
His plane landing in China. You could barely see the plane.
That's right.
On the ground.
Yep.
And China's got a lot more. See, LA is in a valley. That's smog was trapped.
Yeah.
China's just killing itself.
Yeah.
But they are trying to wean themselves off coal-fired power outlets and all the rest of it. They're trying to get out of coal, and they're really going ahead with renewable energy, which we are not doing much about here in Australia.
Well, see, we don't believe there's a problem to solve.
Well,
that's our problem.
Yeah, well, just talk to the people out in Tuvalu and all those islands that are going to be flooded by water. They don't have drinking water.
Well, see that? I won't quote their names because I'm sure to get them wrong, but there was one of these ASEAN conferences or something, and they made a joke about getting them wading shoes on these islands.
Yeah.
So we really care.
Phil, yesterday's the news the other day about the earthquake in Honshu, was it? Kyushu or somewhere in Japan.
Brought back some memories.
Yeah, would have brought back memories for you. But then again, the earth has doubled itself because there was
the trouble?
One in Japan, and then they got another. They got the opposite one in Nicaragua. The Earth is...
There's a lot of theories, and a lot of people claim that these earthquakes are connected.
Yeah, well, they seem to be because
It's coincidental that the amount of pressure that's built up locally over decades and centuries and millennia is just local. And it's because of the pressure building and building and building, and then it snaps. So it's not like a chain where it snaps at one end and pulls the other end.
But it's surprising how often you get that.
You'd be a good American because they believe these things happen in threes.
But
the same with air crashes.
No, I don't. You know,
probably babies.
I don't believe it happens in threes, but it's amazing how you read about an earthquake in, say, Bangladesh or somewhere.
Yeah.
And about a week later, there's an earthquake somewhere else. It seems to me that nature's sort of doing something.
Step back a huge way and think in geological time scales.
Mm-hmm.
Those two happened together, essentially.
Yeah.
Because what we see as days wouldn't even register on the time frame of an earthquake forming.
True. Mm-hmm.
So it's the human brain loves to connect things. And it's perfectly understandable that you would think that this would have to do something with that, but it doesn't.
Oh, look at the clock. It's almost time for us to go.
Okay.
A couple of birthdays around about this time that drag queens and theatre queens would enjoy being reminded of. April 24th, 1934, Shirley MacLaine was born. And April 24th, 1942, Barbara Streisand.
But they share birthdays, don't they?
They do share birthdays.
And Baba.
And they sort, they sort of have as much talent as one another too, really.
They do.
I mean, Shirley MacLaine's kooky.
She's kooky.
Oh, she's got some weird and wonderful ideas.
And has a very pretty brother.
Yeah, Warren Beatty.
Her
name, her actual name is MacLaine Beatty.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Oh, see? save that for trivia.
Okay.
Look, thanks for being with us. Time to go. Time to make room for Stand Up Straight, to be followed by Spirit Lounge. And we hope that you'll enjoy this podcast. Send us an email, beenthere@joy.org.au. If you'd like us to play a little bit of magic music for you, same address. Beenthere@joy.org.au.
Is it been there or been there, done that?
No, just been there.
Been there.
Yeah, just short.
So you don't have to do anything.
No.
You don't have to have done that. You just have to have been there.
That's right.
That saves a lot of work.
It does, doesn't it?
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.